Let's just begin with some rapid zikr practice as people find their way. La ilaha illallah, 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 la ilaha simplest translation, nothing exists but God. Only God is. And we say the Sufi invocation, toward the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being, united with all the illuminated souls who form the embodiment of the Master, the Spirit of Guidance. So the One, absolutely unique, all-inclusive, and you can't add any one to that one and get anything but one. It's only one. It's a unity that has no opposite. We know everything by its opposite. We light and shadow, love and hate and all the rest of it, you know, beauty and ugliness, and we're always comparing on some spectrum of relativity in our awareness. That's why God remains a mystery, because God has no opposite. God is a unique oneness. Ahad. And I like to say the big difference between Islam and Judaism. Islam teaches God is one, Ahad. And Judaism teaches God is one, Echad. Believe me, that's the difference. A slightly different pronunciation of the language, which is really the Semitic language, which Hebrew, Aramaic, Arabic, they all have similar roots, and you can see that the name Allah, for example, Allaha, is the name Jesus used in Aramaic for God. El has the same root as Allah. And so this teaching of the oneness, the unity of all this, these messages of liberation, of enlightenment that came through the different masters and saints and prophets of all time. It's not really so special. It's just right there. It's what's right there in the teachings. And where do we stand in relation to that? If only God exists, if only that unique oneness is, then what are we? What we say in the Sufi invocation, toward the one, the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, the only being. Well, we have being. I mean, we know ourselves as having existence and being. So if God is the only being, then we must be God in some sense of that. Murshid Sam, when he went to India for the first time, he said, I'm going to do a trick here. So he said he got at the end of the line for customs when you were going through, and he said, he shouted out, "I got the answer to all the questions." Somebody took the bait, and one of the customs, he says, "Such as what?" He says, "Such as Tat Vam Asi," which is the central teaching of Hinduism. Thou art that, thatness. There's no difference between thatness and oneness, suchness. It's that reality that is all pervading and absolute, that is transcendental and all inclusive, and that, you know, all these words are just pointing fingers towards it, towards our experience of it. So we are, as Hinduism says, Atman is Brahman. Or we, as you could say, Atman is another name for soul or self. There's a lot of confusion about these terms, soul and self. The intellectually, it's possible to make it clear in the sense that Hazrat Inayat Khan uses it, in the sense that the mystics use it. The soul is our real being. Your soul is your immortal self. And when we look at life from the standpoint of our soul, we are looking at it from the divine perspective, from the way God sees. But our soul is covered over with all sorts of shadows, which are not apart from the divine reality either, except that they obscure the light of the soul, such that we experience ourselves as being limited, separated, and disconnected, when in truth we are nothing but an individuation of that absolute reality, which metaphorically you can call an infinite sun. And this infinite sun, or as Hazrat Inayat Khan calls it in one of his prayers, the sun at the dawn of creation. Just imagine that for a moment, this infinite sun at the dawn of manifestation. And this infinite sun has infinite rays. And each ray is not separate from the source. It's an articulation of the source. It's an individuation of the source, if you will. Because that's how we experience ourselves. When we are doing a zikr in the real sense, not just repeating the words, la ilaha illallahu, but making that connection of oneness with source. Nothing exists but that source. I am flowing from that source. I am nothing but that flowing that has come into a place of awareness and apparent individuality, which I prefer the term individuation, in each one of us. Our heart, our place of feeling, is the place where we draw the qualities of our soul into a reality that functions here in the world. And this is the work of the spiritual path. An icon puts it this way: there is one path, the annihilation of the false self in the real, which raises the mortal to immortality, in which resides all perfection. So someone once asked Murshid Sam, he says, what do you want to do before you die? And he laughed. He said, that's a very strange question to ask someone who has an experience of immortality direct. I mean, if you're living aware of your soul, which is undying, which, like God, has no beginning and no end, it's undying, it's an undying perfection of essence. If you know that that's your real self, and you've wiped clear the chamber of your heart of all of these accretions that have coalesced around the globe of the heart, which holds everything. It's the center of feeling that holds everything. If you can wipe those clear through grace, through spiritual practice and processes, through self-effacement, meaning self-effacement of this, because when we say the false self, it is false in the sense that it's transient, it's separated, and it is disconnected from source. We have a sense of having claimed and an idea of self that we call ourselves. And that idea is equipped with a whole notion of things you don't do well, lots of deficiencies, lots of ideas that are embedded because of our conditioning, the things that we marked us. And so the spiritual path is this process of clearing away the obstructions of the light of the soul. Let's say the soul, in its journey from the thatness into thisness, the terminus of it is right here in your, this ray of your soul is right here in your heart. It's where it has landed, where you can find it. The Sufis use this metaphor of a globe. We have lots of globes here in this room. It's a perfect example. The globe is the heart. It's where all of awareness can be held. All our knowing aspects, all of our sense of memory, of thoughts that come, of analysis and comparison and contraction and contrasting, and our activity of self-identifying. I'm hungry, I'm tired, I'm weak, I'm strong, I'm old, I'm young, I'm, afraid, I'm whatever. We say the Hebrews say, oi, gavalt, oi, vei, ay, 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 you know. So this is, we made this reality. I mean, and everybody does it. It's as a result, If you imagine these nice clear globes of containers that were, you know, if we put a lot of dust and grime and this and that on them, the light would be obscured. And the soul is the light within this globe. It's the Ruh. And what is it we say in the prayer? Khatum. You know, I'm like, Ronnie, if you start trying to break them down and say them, you can't say them, but you have to say, you know, thou art the perfection of love, harmony, and beauty, Lord of heaven and earth, open our hearts so we may hear thy voice that constantly comes from within. Disclose to us thy divine light that is hidden in our souls. Disclose to us thy divine light that is hidden in our souls. Disclose to us thy divine light that is hidden in our souls. Say that with me for a moment. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may see and understand life better. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. Once more. Disclose to us thy divine light, which is hidden in our souls, that we may know and understand life better. So there are two ways in general of going about this process of the purification of the nafs. The nafs is a word for self, ego, but it is there are different levels of nafs. From the most blind to source, to the most totally transparent, to the light of being. The activity of ego is a centripetal force, which is to say, it coalesces, it pulls things towards a center. That ability, if we didn't have a sense of self in this way, of having a centration of being, some kind of centering, then we would have no boundaries. We would be vague, and we might, if we were so graced, be dwelling in light, and if we could live in a cave somewhere, we might just stay in that condition. Not a complete condition. The soul came here, individuated here, in order to have an experience, in order to, from the divine point of view, a saying of the Prophet Muhammad speaking in the voice of God. He says, God says, I was a hidden treasure, but I longed to be known. And so by the breath of love and compassion, I created all that is. This longing to be known of the hidden treasure, what is this hidden treasure? It is this that-ness itself, this absolute transcendental oneness that is full of all possibilities. In fact, the very first line of the first chapter of the Quran says, after Bismillah Rahman Rahim, Alhamdulillah Hidabil Alameen. Alhamdulillah Hidabil Alameen. Alhamdulillah means all praise, all gratitude to God, who Rabbil is the one who holds in mastery, in a caring embrace, all possible universes. All possible universes are held. So this, so God is the source. This hidden treasure is the source of all possible worlds, all possible realities. But in its pure potency, it is it contains all possibility. But then God says, "I long to be known." That this hidden treasure longs to be known, and you are the expression of that longing, because creation, all of manifestation, is the expression of God's longing to be known in one of those possible ways that are there only potentiality, and here are manifest in terms of a material reality. And so that's what each soul comes here to freshly experience in a unique way. And that's but your experience is God's experiencing this way, another way of experiencing God's own self freshly through your own soul's awakening. And so every being, whether you're at the lowest level of nafs and just driven by insatiable compulsive desire, blind to the reality of anything that you can give respect to other than your own sense of this self that's identified in that state of insatiable desire, lust, anger, whatever it is. I mean, it's all-consuming, blind to source. And God says, talking about this lowest level of nafs, God says it leads to self-degradation. So that's how you can look at it. It leads to self-degradation. And you see it in that aspect of ourselves and others where, you know, people are driven to do harm to themselves, where they can't help doing harm to themselves. They go into a compulsive pattern in which they are become self-destructive. They can't get out of it. God says it leads to self-degradation except for the fact that I am forgiveness and mercy. So that's the grace that comes, you know, unearned, not as a result of our effort, but somehow or other we are. It reaches us in our blindness, and that's an important thing, you see, because if we are identified with our place of deficiency, our idea of self that has been shaped around the wounding that we've received in life, not being seen in our essence. This is one of the biggest pains that people have. Nobody sees me for who I really am. Nobody appreciates me. My parents didn't see me. They wanted me to fulfill their idea of what I ought to be, my family's agenda. But I wasn't allowed to be myself, to be seen. And so maybe I'm not worth being seen, or maybe I'm angry about not being seen, or I'm depressed about not being seen. And this sort of thing, it's the reality of every human being. You know, I mean, there's this place in us where this becomes our reality. And how do we escape from it? How do we find that grace that brings light into this darkness? Merchant Sam's Yadam, or cosmic manifestation within esoteric Buddhism, was Fudo, who's the aspect of the Buddha who manifests in the hell realms. You know, nothing is left out, you see. This whole idea of eternal damnation is a damnable idea, you know, that was created by the mind of human beings that didn't have enough of a sense of the true forgiveness and mercy of the divine being, you see. Any ethical code, and I'm coming back to my theme, this is the way I talk, so you just have to get used to it. I go around and then come back to what it's all interrelated, but Sometimes I lose the thread in the middle of it. When you pass 70, you have the permission. But so what was I saying? Yeah, right. Well, you know, we get stuck there. But there is a place where we can reach that, and you know, so that we don't get stuck there. And it's hard because when you're caught up in this aspect of self, when other people are really happy, it makes you feel like, oh, they can experience happiness, but I can't. It just brings up your woundedness. And in relation, if you see people that are experiencing intimacy, you say, yeah, but I haven't got intimacy in my life. If you come up against into power, you think, yeah, but I'm weak. You know, you come up to love, you say, yeah, but I don't feel lovable, and no one really loves. You know, that is the reaction. But it actually, that response to the perfection is a connection with that perfection. It's a negative connection with it, but it allows us to get in touch with it in a certain way. We say God is the only one who raises us up and the only one who brings us down, the only one who strengthens us and the only one who weakens us. You know, so the opposites are a way of approaching perfection. In fact, the name Allah, all yes, la no. It's the kind of, I don't know, not exactly mainstream interpretation of the word, but it leaves out the at the end, which is the beginning of who, and which is implied within the name. Your real self is perfect, but how do you realize it? That's what it means. That's why we say unite with all the illuminated souls, because we want to unite with those beings in our heart. How do you unite? By an experience of oneness of heart. Love is the only thing that overcomes separation. Once you experience separation, the only thing that overcomes separation is this love, which in which the sense of the beloved allows you to overcome the contraction of the idea of self that has made you operate with a sense of deficiency. Let's just these within the Sufi tradition, and which is all classical Sufi tradition, you have the deep interpretations of Quran, for example, and in which the you have the story of the creation of the human being in prototype, and the creation of Adam. And Adam is the complete human being. So according to the Sufis, anyone who becomes complete in their awakening to the essence of their soul is a complete human being. So this is our inheritance. So, you know, and this is the, our essence is to be complete. And Buddha said the same thing on his illumination. He said, I see now that all sentient beings are illuminated. They're simply unaware of it. This is what Buddha saw on his illumination. This is our state. Our soul's essence is illumination, is awakening, is perfection, and yet we're unaware of it, or we're only partially aware of it. And we would like to be more and more aware of it, and one way to do that is to connect with those beings that are fully realized. in a spirit of oneness, not putting them up. Oh, she is so wonderful. And there she is right here. The woman Merchant Samson was the highest human being he ever met, Mother Krishnabai. The most manifest God reality of a person, so how do you experience a oneness with them? You don't just put them up on an altar and bow down to them. You practice, a loving connection in which your heart becomes one with their heart, and your vision becomes one with their vision. And you naturally can learn to see with the eyes of your guide in that way. And so this is the all this instruction is given right within the Sufi invocation, encouragement to connect with illuminated souls, because that reminds you of your own illumination. Imagine God's perfections, the idealized Lord of the whole humanity. But I just made it up. I idealized it. I imagined it. Well, we imagined infinity, and it exists because we imagined it, right? It must exist because if you can think it, it exists. This is I can poke holes in these arguments, but this is from an experiential point of view. This is very true. You see it in mathematics, for example. If you can conceive it, it exists, and consequently. You said, Euclidean geometry says, that given a line and a point, not on the line, there's only one line that intersects that point that's perpendicular to that line. You can see it right there in the rafters, right? So that's an axiom, right? Later in history, some other mathematician comes along, and he imagines, what would the geometry be like if you said, given a line and a point not on the line, there's an infinite number of lines that intersect that point and are perpendicular to that line. So that's impossible. Look, see? No. But in the sphere of thought, it is real. And when Einstein did his work on relativity, he used Riemannian geometry. He couldn't use Euclidean geometry. He used Riemannian geometry, which is the geometry I was just talking about. Given a line, a point not on a line, there's an infinite number. That's just one way of saying, we give birth to the infinite. By imagining it. We are, in our essence, created to be able to imagine perfection. And one of the most beautiful hadiths or sayings of the Prophet Muhammad speaking, as I said, the Hadith Qudsi, where he speaks in the voice of God. God says, I am as my true lover imagines me to be. I am as my loving slave imagines me to be. Look how we imagine God to be. Look at this room. It's such a beautiful picture of the idealization process of humanity and all these different forms in which we have imagined perfection, in which would be. But you see, beyond imagination, it's like an icon says, make God a reality. In other words, call up from the resources of your own being a notion of what is truly beautiful, a notion of what is perfect. So make God a reality and God will make you the truth. Because we're intrinsically designed to do this. And Adam is the complete human being, the insan kamil, the complete human being, has within their soul, your soul is awakened all the perfections. But these perfections, these names, as they're called, these divine qualities, these wazaif, are inherent in each one of us. It's just that some of them have been occluded by our birth, our birth conditions, our potty training, our whole our relationship with our parents, our whole formation process of relating to the world and being told you're this, you're that, you're not this, you're not that, you got to do this, you can't do that. All of these things began to cause a kind of disconnection from all of these latent perfections. So the spiritual path in this way is to awaken what's latent within us in order to become complete. And but what happens is that we are inclined to have more connection, more awakening in certain aspects of perfection than others. So that's that's kind of the unique perfection of each soul, is that in this lifetime, you know, someone comes in with a lot of qualities of strength, and someone comes in with a lot of qualities of compassion, and someone comes in with a lot of qualities of intelligence, and so forth, to perfect. You know, so this kind of a perfected blend, and you know, and some qualities are really hard to deal with. I mean, for example, people have a lot of difficulty dealing with power. Power is because we've been abused by power. We've seen how power is grasped by the ego and used as a weapon for war and all sorts of destruction. And so if one's been wounded by people who exerted power over one, one has a negative relationship with power. One doesn't want power. One wants it, you know, so that one can use it and get back, you know, that sort of thing, you know. So the world is nothing but the nafs, the different stages of the nafs blown up large, basically. You know, you blow up this big balloon, the world is, it's all these conditions of nafs. But it's God, another way of looking at it is it's God in different stages of awakening. And not to cut off ourselves from it. Not to, when we come face to face with something, to because if we refuse, if people who are conscientious, who are good-hearted, refuse to be powerful because they've been burned by power, well, somebody's going to be exercising power. And if it ain't you, you know, and you refuse to be someone who has a positive relationship with it, then how can you complain about the way others use power? So we need to heal these wounds of separation. We have a separation from the world, from people, from humanity, and we have a separation from the source of all that is. And these are the two major holes that we want to connect in the spiritual process. I hope I'm keeping this simple enough. I think I am. You know, because this is, it shouldn't be so complex at all. Children understand love. They understand light. They don't need a lot of philosophy and metaphysics to get there. They just need to be seen, to be given the opportunity to grow in an atmosphere that is safe for them. And this teaching of Indra's web is a beautiful one because it celebrates the perfection of each soul. Each node in this, you can imagine this infinite lattice work, spider's web, if you will, of interconnected strands. And at every node where they cross is a jewel. And each jewel is the a soul, is an essence that in its own individuation, in its own perfection of its uniqueness, reflects all the perfections that there are. This is extraordinary, you know, to realize that one has this quality. And so this is where we begin. It's sort of, I'm trying to give today just kind of a really big picture, a kind of metaphysical picture of our situation. And so let's do a few practices that remind us of the light of our soul and our intrinsic self-worth. Because the biggest place where the ego has been formed, where we have contracted around an idea of deficiency, has to do with a place of unworthiness, a place of shame, a place where we don't feel like, we feel like the lowest of the low, really. And sometimes conditions bring us to awareness of that place. And there's a wazifa for that. Yamudil. God is the one that brings us to that deepest place of shame and self-loathing. But it also means the root of the word mudil. And you can't understand these names unless you go into the roots of them. It means to fulfill a deeply desired wish. You mean, in other words, you can't really grow and until you face this junk, this stuff, you not turn away from it, because typically what happens is we have this deep wound, and then out of self-pity we contract around it, we make an idea of self, then we develop a strategy so that, because it's so painful, we don't want it to be touched or palpitated, so we develop a strategy which we call our personality in order to avoid having to trigger that woundedness. And, we do songs and dances, or maybe we just are very defended or whatever, we don't face it in the light. We don't bring that that loving forgiveness right into the heart of it. So we're going to do here. I thought last period we spent a lot of time on our feet and being of the older sort. I won't get people up. I'll just talk this morning. We'll do some sitting practices, but we will get up and do some things in some of the other classes. But we'll do a few practices today around this process. But I think the most important place to start is with the practice that brings us, helps to bring us aware of the nature of our soul. Our soul is illuminated, it's perfect, it is, as Muhammad says, an activity of God. Someone said, what is the ruh? You know, in Hebrew, it's different. It's ruach. What is it? He said, it's an activity of God. Your soul is an activity of God. An icon says, it is the soul which sees. And this is in the teachings on how do you develop insight in life. See from the standpoint of your soul. You know, I mean, and how do you develop a sense of what I should accomplish and what should I do or not do? You have a sense of what your soul is looking for, and it's not always what's pleasurable. It's what the experience the soul is looking for to awaken. And if you look at some of the times when that have been the very worst in your life, the most that have brought you down lowest, you see the hand of God in that. You know, because because you had to face it, and you had to look at it, and from there you can grow. From there you can grow, and you can bring light into it. But before we get into going down into some of that, what I want to do is this practice, Yanur, Ya'aziz. Now, Ya'aziz, you know what Ya'nur means? Illumination. Infinite light. And the manifestation of infinite light. And that's the that's Nur. And Aziz is a name of in the family of divine strength. Aziz is, but it's a kind of strength that everybody can relate to, because it's not power that you have to shrink from, because well you know, it would be prudent to surrender to it. You know, that sort of thing. But we say in our prayer, to thee do we willingly surrender. You know, we give our willing surrender. You know, we want to surrender to. But, you know, Aziz is a different kind of power. It is a power that is based on its sweetness. It's rare. It's based on, it's beautiful, because it's based on the your intrinsic self-worth. Because you are, if you only knew who you really are, you are an immortal soul that is not separate from the God reality. And from that, knowing that, you can draw strength from that. I mean, you know, you put aside, you wipe out the chambers of the concept of the false self. You know, you wipe it clear from what you're holding in your heart as your picture of yourself, and you identify with this intrinsic self-worth and strength that is your birthright, who your true, what your true nature is. And that is the strength that comes, that is expressed by this vibration. Now, one way of thinking of working with these names productively is to understand that when you say the name, that name is God. It's just like if you are taking the communion, that wafer is the body of Christ, you know. That name is the body of God. It's like the shaman gives you the medicine in the ceremony. And that sacred medicine is the body of God, you see. So our prayer is, okay, you have to open yourself to reach you in the places where you're defended. Because we defend against the light, you see. We defend against things coming in that are going to touch us in a way that's going to cause us to have to let go of some of this stuff. Because letting go of it, it's like, well, what's going on? This is much worse. I was much better before all this stuff started coming up. You know, but the stuff comes up and you let it go. But you have to open so that it can reach you in this deepest place. So that's why it's good to be able to get to those places that are so protected, because the wound there is so big that we don't want it to be touched, you know. So let's just begin by reminding ourselves of our true nature and drawing strength from that by doing the prayer of doing 33 times these names. Ya'az, if you haven't done some of these practices before, Ya'nur, N-O-O-R, I'm doing it like it sounds, Nur, N-O-O-R, Ya'nur, Ya'aziz. A-Z-E-E-Z, Ya'aziz. Get that ease. Yeah. So we're going to do this 33 times, understanding this, asking for us to wake up to the quality of our soul and draw strength from knowing that this is our intrinsic being and full of self-worth. So here we go. Ya'nur. Ya Aziz, Ya Nur, 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 Ya Aziz. Ya Nur, Ya Aziz, Ya Nur, Ya Aziz, Ya Nur.
Ya Aziz, Ya Nur, 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 Ya Aziz, once more. Ya Nur, Ya Aziz. Now we're going to take a couple of minutes inhaling, exhaling Ya Nur, and inhaling Ya Aziz. So feel as you exhale the Ya Nur, feel that light of the infinite sun, which is your soul, coming into your heart and illuminating. And when you breathe in the Ya Aziz, remembering that, you feel your the strength that you can draw from your intrinsic self-worth. Thank you.
Now, continuing to breathe in this way, look at something in your life that you consider a challenge, but look at it from the perspective in which you're now sensing yourself. See how different it seems than the way ordinarily you look at it? Not so impossible. Not so threatening. Even if you fail, you know, doesn't mean you're bad or doesn't go to some place. It just bounces off. So we have a few more minutes left here. I'd like to open it up if there are questions that came up. I realize I threw a lot of thoughts at you. Some of you are quite familiar with this rap of mine. And I know a number of you have read The Physicians of the Heart, which I was happy to be a part of. I brought another book here. This is The Bowl of Sake of Hasrei Nayat Khan with commentaries by Murshid Samuel Lewis. And we just published it this year. I was happy to work on the book as an editor. And we basically, editing it, we tried to, as much as we could without convoluting the language, make it more gender inclusive, because the English of those times, and Murshid Sam was often always used he, which was grammatically correct and so on. So we, but sometimes it's awkward and we just go with what they said originally. But and occasionally Murshid, some of what Murshid Sam wrote in his commentaries on his teacher, you see, he drew out the his love and his sense of oneness with Hasrei Nayat Khan, who was his principal teacher in his life, was always the basis for his expression of his wisdom. So I stopped over in on the way up here and picked these up at the Self and Soul Center. So I'll give it to somebody to hold at their table at the bazaar when you have it. I just brought 10 copies. But let me just read one thing to you. The identification with the days is just basically not the most important thing here. So I'm not going to read you. I just read you to where it opened up here. The day is January 29th, but like I said in my introduction, the book is, I don't know how the names got, these things got put on the different days. I don't think an icon said, oh, June 30th, that's that day, you know, so whatever. But there's so much teaching in it. It's kind of like the I Ching. It doesn't matter where you open it up. There's wisdom there. Self-pity is the worst poverty. Sam quoted that all the time. Self-pity is the worst poverty. It overwhelms one until one sees nothing but illness, trouble, and pain. This self-pity is this sense of contracting around an idea of the deficiency of oneself, of one, the blame, the shame or the blameworthiness of yourself. You know, I mean, we contract on it. It's almost like a narcissistic act of self-identification with it. You know, I'm claiming this, you know. In my grandiosity, you know, I am, you know, so bad. I have this self-pity. Self-pity is the worst poverty. It overwhelms one until one sees nothing but illness, trouble, and pain. Merchant Sam comments, self-pity is a concentration upon nafs, the cause of all disharmony. When one concentrates upon God, nothing but love will be found. But when the attention is centered around the thought of self, all ugliness, pain, and illness will arise. Of course, in a certain sense, they were always there, but this concentration gives them more life. Self-pity deprives the body and mind of the usual life which is naturally bestowed upon them by the grace of God. It feeds the elementals who derive their potency from human excrescences, and these elementals in turn increase trouble. Concentration upon darkness does not increase the darkness, but it does impede the opportunity for light and health to reach the place of sickness. Now, there's a difference between being aware of it, being open to it, facing it, and having self-pity around it, you see. You know, he says, oh, here I am rejected again. Oh, you know. And then he brings up all my stories of rejection and all my feelings of abandonment and the shame of it and my sense of unworthiness. Why me? Why me, God? Why me? You know, that's self-pity, you know. But I'm claiming it, you know, and I'm giving it life. And if I and that's the false self that we're giving life to, you see, by doing that. But by facing it, by looking at it, by looking at the place where these impressions lie and bringing in the light, Ya Nur, Ya Aziz, reminding us of the divine, the names that are more particularly calibrated to reach these regions, which we'll go into on some other time. But now that I've chatted again, now we have about 5 minutes or so left.
Can you say what the elementals are?
Well, the elementals, I almost didn't even read that sentence because I knew somebody would ask that. But they're kind of low-grade consciousness that exists within see, everything is alive. Rocks are alive, they just don't have much to say. As Rumi said, you know, I slept as a rock, I dreamed as a plant when I died as a rock. When I died as a plant, I awoke as an animal. And when I died as an animal, I realized myself as a human being. And when I die as a human being, I will be born again in the angelic realm. And when I die, when have I ever grown less by dying? When have I ever grown less by letting go of what I was holding on to and surrendering and going into the next thing? But an elemental is a kind of a life form that exists at a very low level of material reality.
You made a statement earlier about something like, I am what my deepest lover sees in me.
Yeah, God says that. I am as my lover sees me, yeah.
Which reminds me of my favorite saying, God let me be what my dog thinks I am. But the question was...
I have a dog. I'm thinking about that one. I don't know if I want to be with my dog. But, you know, he loves me. I know that.
But my question is, I'm aware sometimes with different friends that I have some friends who think I'm very wise, and I have some friends who think I'm just damn stupid, you know.
Yeah.
And I seem to rise to the occasion. I can be so stupid in front of certain people that think of me that way. And so, you know, I ask myself sometimes, and some people actually, it's very dark. And so lately I've been avoiding those people. I'm thinking, I don't need these people in my life. So I'm just curious, how do we deal with that that limiting factor, you know, when we want to love everybody, but somehow I'm letting that in to affect me into, you know, I'm too open to that, to what they're thinking of me.
Well, that's a whole subject. How do we relate to the way, how do we shape ourselves by the way people will think about us? But I want to turn your question around, because I don't have time to answer that aspect of it right now. But I turn it around. How does God feel about it? You know, I mean, on the one hand, if I imagine there isn't a God, there isn't one. I mean, God says, okay, not here then. that's one of the possibilities. we get invested in an image of ourselves, you know. So if we're not invested in that, you know, we can take the praise and the blame and drink the cup. You know, and it doesn't go, because if we, you know, but Mercy said, I'm just going to say this, because it just isn't to you, said the only danger, when I look at our work, I see nothing but success. And when I look into the spiritual sky, I see nothing but success for our work, except in one area where I see one problem. And that is that some people will think that love means just being passive. Love is a great strength and power. And it doesn't mean just to be a sponge. So that's what, you know, so I mean, if you're coming from that power of love in the relationships that you have, you know, you can change. There are times when you just don't. You don't just work with accepting what is given in a tolerant way. You use your connection with them as being a vehicle of where you are a channel of what love, the power of love, is giving you to say. You know, in that situation. And but if you can't deal with the impressions, don't turn on the news, and don't go to the person that brings it up. You know, I mean, you know, be smart about it. You know, take on what you feel is yours that you can handle. You know, so without going into some deep teaching about it, because we can address it again in the same way here. But I wanted to go to this basic question about self-worth, because I think once we get that one solved, we're going to be okay, you know. I mean, we're going to keep addressing it our whole life, but we're going to find ways of understanding that we have ourselves created this notion by the way we've taken in the experiences, and we have the ability to overcome this. And that's the power of God working in us, that we become aware of awakening. So thanks for the opportunity to be here again. It's a great camp for we love to come, our family loves to come here, so I'm glad I keep getting invited to come and be with you. But I'd be very happy to have a little group, whatever. I don't need the whole, you know. So, you know, I'm really happy to have this opportunity, because this is my life, to do what I can to to be a vehicle of these teachings. And inshallah, that's what we're all doing in our own way. You see, that's what we're trying to bring out here at camp. Each one of us, in our own way, where we are here in our life, is worthy, is beautiful, is a vehicle of God in process, and is a jewel in Indra's web. Is the Yawahid. That means the unique perfection of God in each grain of sand, in every soul. The Wahid is, we want to emphasize that, because as soon as a person understands their own intrinsic value, then they can let go of so much of this fear and clinging around an idea of self and self-protection. And they can live their life to the fullest that their soul is asking them to do. Because that's what your soul wants. And at the end, you won't be saying, you know, oh, I'm sorry I did that, or I'm sorry I did that. You'll be saying, oh, gosh, I'm sorry I didn't do that. I didn't take that opportunity, you know. So this is about having the courage to take the opportunity to show up for your life and have the courage to be. And now our time really is up, so let's say the prayer, because everybody doesn't get up at 6:30 in the morning to do the healing service. Let's do the healing prayer that we say every day after doing the purification breath. Beloved Lord, Almighty God, through the rays of the sun, through the waves of the air, through the all-pervading life in space, purify and revivify us. And we pray, heal our bodies, hearts, and souls. Amen. You see, our soul is perfect, but it needs to be healed because we've allowed it to identify and to be obscured. So that's the healing we're asking for our soul. God bless you.